Hello and welcome to Breaking Geek Rare, the podcast, the premier flagship and international podcast of LRM Online. I'm your host, Brandon Jones, and on this special episode, I get an opportunity to sit down with Brandon Collins from the Medium Popcorn podcast, and we talk about his experience at the Toronto International Film Festival. I've done this film festival before, but it's been virtual the last 2 years. For me, he had an opportunity to go, so I get his thoughts on films like Lakewood, Dune, and a slew of other things that he saw there and got to have an experience that I can only hope to dream to have one day soon when we leave this pandemic. But for now, sit back, relax, and get ready to have a good time listening to this podcast where we laugh it up talking about these films. I'll be back with you after the break. Let's hear it. Go.
Oh, I just really hated Lakewood. It's Naomi Watts. She's on this weird tear where she's just like a bad mom in a lot of movies. She makes terrible decisions, but she uses her white privilege to get what she's trying to get for her kids.
Name another movie. What's another
one? Book of Henry, where she legit like plans a murder on behalf of her dead son. It's incredible.
I heard so many bad things about that movie that I didn't want to see, because who directed that? Somebody directed
Colin Chernoff, and he lost Star Wars Episode 9 because of this movie. That's how bad it was.
Right. And so I was like, nah, I guess I need to see that. That's exactly what happened.
Oh man, it was.
But what made you watch the movie?
Well, I am a fan of Naomi Watts. Like, she's a solid actress most times, but she really is getting into this weird thing where she's playing pretty bad moms. I don't know if that's like her lane or that's just like what her agent's putting her in for, but this movie,
she might not even realize it.
Yeah, this movie, I get what it was trying to do, but there were so many things where I'm like, only a white woman be able to do this.
So what was it about what she did that made you think that she was a bad mother? Because I had the one that I told you about when we were texting.
Yeah, I think it's just the way that she was like kind of talking to her son. And the way she talked to other people too. There's just something that was just so off-putting about the way that she portrayed a character. And I think it was very telling that, right? And like, again, like some of her friends had kids at that school, so they were going there themselves. But I think it was very telling that no one really picked her up.
Man, that drove me nuts. So I couldn't tell, to your point, I couldn't tell if that was a her issue or if that was like her friends are all assholes. You know, I struggle with that.
So, yeah, that was a lot. But it's also like, who told her to jog like 7 miles away from her home?
Like, I do that. Well, so like, but the thing is, it's a two-parent household, right? So, if my kids were that old, I probably still would, even if it was a one-parent household, because he could drive to school on his own. So, from that perspective, that makes sense. But I would run that far. To answer,
stand corrected.
But here's the one thing, and I said this to you in text. I think the thing that really bothered me that she did was she wakes up, she immediately tells somebody, hey, I'm taking a personal day. And then when the son is having trouble getting up, she's just like, no, you gotta get up. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, no, the same reason that you're taking a day off, he probably also needs a day off. So.
Yeah. And that's probably what the guilt is supposed to be, right? With her trying to get to the school and she finds out he did go to school. Also, that dude at the auto mechanic place, he wouldn't have been able to see that car. Let's be completely, my college got on lockdown when we had an active gunman on campus. Yeah. There were helicopters. You cannot step even like 20 feet near that campus for the whole day, right?
Yeah.
There's no way, even if he could see the parking lot, there's no way he was able to actually go and be like, yeah, that's the car. Just know what I was just like.
I tried to suspend belief, and you know what's funny? I didn't even think about that as I was watching, like the scene at the end. I didn't even try to match up. Like, okay, So he had to have been like somewhere in this area to be able to see that. Like, it just didn't even cross my mind, because for me, I was so wrapped up in like, all right, is this kid gonna fucking make it out of here or not? And because of the people in the movie, like I was pulling for him, right? Like, I didn't like her friends. She was okay. And then he was like, all right, please don't let whatever bullshit was going on with them impact him and let him make it home. And then he did. I was watching with my wife, and she was like waving her face and just like, she was just so into it and like not breathing until we could see him.
Did you watch The Guilty by any chance with Jake Gyllenhaal?
I did watch The Guilty.
Okay, so for me, it was like, yo, white people have no chill, because they were, Jake Gyllenhaal yells at that killer, like, what, the person he thinks is the killer,
yeah,
like, just goes off on him, right? And then Naomi Watts calls the shooter and is like, he's a good boy. I'm like, don't tell him about your specific child, because he might be like, yo, your mom called me, I'm gonna kill you. Like, there's just so many bad decisions she made.
So I couldn't tell that that's not what happened. There was a moment where, like, he's under the table with the phone, yep, and he's saying something to her. And I could swear I heard the killer, or the gunman, saying something like, who are you, or something like that. Was he talking to him, or did I miss?
I think he was talking on the phone, because I remember that's a video I think the son sent her.
Okay.
So he was recording that video and sent it to her while she was on the phone with the shooter. And then my whole thing is, though, one, like, you don't know how unstable this dude is. You don't know if, like, he has a specific target. You don't want to put a target on your son's back, right?
Yeah.
And then on top of that, she kept frantically calling her son back. And I'm like, if this kid doesn't have the wherewithal to put his phone on silent, you're going to get him fucked up. Like,
that drove me nuts.
There's just so like, many things.
So this is funny. This isn't a horror movie, but as that was happening, what you're describing, I'm like yelling at the screen, why the fuck are you calling him? Right? Like, at that point, she knows, or should know, that something is happening, and yet she's calling back. And to your point about having the wherewithal, that's one of the first things they talk about now, is make sure your phone is on silent for these kinds of things. And for me, I walked away from that movie angry, not necessarily her. Like, you're right about the things that were problematic with her, but I walked away so angry at American society that they just paled. Yeah, like, I was just like, fuck all of you. Because this is a thing that is unique to our country.
Yep.
And if it happens somewhere else, they do something about it. And it's just like, I can't with you people.
I think it was at South by Southwest. There was a movie about school shooting with like Julie Bowen. And it's about like her daughter, like, is at the school where like there's at the shooter. And so you see the kids in the school and them dealing with the trauma of that. And
yeah,
that movie was also like, I think it's just me, like the same feeling you have, Brandon, which is American society is so fucked up. Like,
yeah,
that this keeps happening and we keep making these movies. And so for me, I'm never 100% in, because I'm like, this has been a problem since I was in middle school. Like, what is going on? Right. And it's,
yeah,
you know, it's definitely an issue. I think The Guilty, in regards to these like kind of claustrophobic, almost horror-esque films, I think that Guilty did a really good job, because that twist, I did not see coming. I was like, oh, that's like one of the few plot twists where I'm like, oh shit, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I liked it. I was struggling with it mostly because I didn't like him, but to the point where the movie was talking about policing and mental health awareness and just not making assumptions about people, all of those things and all those aspects like kind of helped me through it. He was really good in the role, because generally I like him as a, like, I don't know him as a person, but he seems all right. And so watching this, I'm like, fuck this dude. And like, to your point about that plot twist and just the gut punch that he felt, and he was really good at conveying that. I really like that.
I think Jake Gyllenhaal is finding a good groove of playing these really complicated, almost villainous characters, like between Mysterio, prisoners, and this. I'm like, I kind of like dark Jake Gyllenhaal. It almost reminds me of Donnie Darko, but he's older now, so he can play like more mature characters that have a lot of layers, because he's really good at that. Like, and so I actually think it was a really good showcase. I don't think anyone's going to really watch it, to be completely honest, but I was impressed. I was impressed with the voice acting. They got a great cast for the voices, and I think that's what sells it too.
Yeah, I didn't. One of the things I do think is interesting about that movie is, so this and Lakewood, because they are so isolated, very small cast and things like that, I'm curious how many people go to the movies to see that kind of movie. It's very austere, right? Okay. Like, it's almost like Castaway. You go see a movie, just like, for the majority of the movie, like, this is it.
That is true. This is like a, there's like a new thing with like, hey, we're just going to focus on this one actor. Like, it's just going to be them in the situation. Like, I think Will Smith and Matt Damon kind of started that off, and now everyone's doing their own version.
Yeah. 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 But to your point about the guilty, like, it is good and it's complicated. I kind of want to see it again just to see what, if anything, gets said can sets up that twist better. Because you're right, it comes almost out of nowhere. I mean, not out of nowhere. It's well done, almost to the point where it comes out of nowhere. So I'm very curious, if I saw it again, would you hear a thing and be like, oh, okay, that right there, that's what I missed the first time.
Yeah, so. I mean, I just think Jake Gyllenhaal sold like his need for redemption so much with that character that he was willing to believe whatever he was told and then try to save this person. I thought he did a great job, because you understood, like you talked about the gut punch. I mean, that's a phenomenal scene. That, I don't know what the rest of the acting pool looks like, but that could potentially get him a nomination. Like, that's,
yeah,
that was a great scene.
Yeah, it was. Absolutely. So, Wait on Carolyn, about now is where she would probably drop in, but she was saying that she was having technical issues, and that's why she's on another interview, and that started late. One of the things I'm trying to wait and hold off to ask you about Dune, but I think I just want to jump into it, because we talked about it. Yeah, Dune.
Oh, okay.
We talked about it on the other Breaking Geek Radio episode that we did today, and I'm really curious, because what we talked about was in relation to Nolan. So I don't know if you saw the news, the fact that Nolan's like, bye-bye Warner Brothers.
Yep.
And he's now over to Warner, or to Universal. And so the big deal about that was, this is a guy that made billions of dollars for this studio. Now he's just like, all right, I'm out. And what was interesting was that Warner Brothers has promised Denis Villeneuve, like, regardless of how this movie does, they're going to make the next one. Okay, and sure. Yes. And so because of that, I'm really curious. I've seen very disparate reviews of this. I've seen a 10, multiple 10s. I've also seen somebody, like, their review was, Dune is the movie that you can see that will be in theaters shortly. This is my review of Dune. I was like, God damn. I've seen it called Watered Down Star Wars. And so I guess I kind of want to talk to you about that in relation to what Warner Brothers is doing and how you felt about the movie.
Yep. So Denis Villeneuve, I know he recently came out talking shit about the Marvel movies, which I feel very conflicted about. He makes visually stunning movies, between Prisoners, Sicario, Arrival, and Blade Runner. Like, he makes phenomenal sci-fi movies, right? Dune, I would put in the middle of all the movies he's done in regards to
visually, or in terms of quality?
Quality and visually. I would say, really? If you didn't show me anything, Blade Runner 2049 is one of the most beautiful movies I've ever seen in my life. Like, they shot the hell out of that movie. It's fantastic. This was like a watered down version of that. If it's stuff I had already seen before, I just happened to be watching the IMAX screening, so that was helpful. But at the end of the day, I'm like, I don't know if there's an audience that's going to be into this story enough to want to see two more of these. Like, there are some cool action scenes. I think they're overdoing Zendaya in the marketing. I think that's going to come to bite them a little bit. And honestly, it's 2.5 hours, and that's just the screening I saw, right? That's like start to finish. That's without preview. So I don't know in the theater if this is going to be a moneymaker. And that was what surprised me a little bit about the budget when I read it, because I'm like, he essentially got Christopher Nolan budget, but he's never had Christopher Nolan box office numbers. So I was kind of curious about what that's about, but maybe Warner Brothers knew that their relationship with Christopher Nolan was waning. And so they're like, who's the next big person that is probably going to have a huge hit? It might be Villeneuve. And so that's me and my theory. I think the Warner Brothers decision for the same day theater release has not been good. But I will be fair in saying most of the movies that have done this have been really bad. I would say with the exception of In the Heights, Suicide Squad, Judas and the Black Messiah, they've been rough.
I really like Reminiscence. I'm gonna throw that so I agree with your list. I love Reminiscence. And I've been arguing with people about that movie. And I feel like that you know, that should probably tell me something. But I 100% understand why people don't like it. But I love it.
It's gonna have long lasting effects unless they completely change course, which they're probably not. I think they really screwed up. Like David Chase is furious at them, right? For the Sopranos movie. He's like, I wouldn't have done it if I knew that this was going to be how it's released. It's a movie. It should be only in theaters, not where you can watch on your TV screen, like a TV show. I mean,
wait, so the Sopranos movie based on Sopranos, the TV show, is not fit to be seen on HBO. Okay.
I mean, I get it. It's kind of like I was really happy to see that Bob's Burgers, the movie, is going to be only theatrical release. It's not going to be a Disney Plus thing because, if you're if you have a long running, really popular show and you get the opportunity to do a feature film, whether it's about that show or relation to that show, you're like, oh man, this is I'm glowing up, right? This is dope.
I get it from a couple of things. So I'll address a couple of things you said. First is with Zendaya, yes. So that is a thing that I saw in one of the reviews, that she is essentially in the dream sequences from the movie. And what I said was, she's one of the reasons I was going to see this movie. Malcolm and Marie, Spider-Man, all the things that she has done over the last few years, Euphoria, I've been really into.
Yeah, she's a great actress and she's beautiful. She's going to be one of the biggest stars of our lifetime.
So young, right? Yeah. All of the things that she's doing right now, and she is just at the beginning, relative beginning. And so for me to have read that, I was like, because it was in conjunction with the story about the fact that she's going to be more center in the next one. I was like, wait, what do you mean? And then I read on, and then it said what you were talking about. As far as the release schedule goes, I get it. But the way that I view it in my head is there are a few ways to look at it. I do think that Warner Brothers did the right thing. It's almost like Afghanistan, right? Pulling out is the right thing to do. Releasing these movies in this way, right thing to do. Seems like the coordination and the things that you needed to do beforehand didn't get done. So they needed to have conversations with these creatives. They needed to be able to sell it to them. And because I distinctly remember when Universal, I think it was Universal, way back at the beginning of the pandemic, and I think it was Trolls. They said hey, we're gonna do a dual release and something like that. And the theater came out and was like, we're not gonna screen Fast and Furious because you're doing X, Y, Z and blah, blah, blah. And based on that reaction, the theater really came out looking bad because there was an understanding of how bad the pandemic was at the point. Universal was ahead of the game and seemed to be making the right decision. And so my feeling about what Warner Brothers is doing now, what Disney is doing to some respect, is that is the right thing. But it seems like there needed to be better coordination with the creatives to get them on board. You're never going to get everybody on board. You can't make everybody happy. But
I didn't talk to anybody.
That's
why Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot, they were like, what the hell? Everyone, because you're not only messing up with people's expectations of how their art's going to be received and like imbued, but you're also messing with people's money. And I know these are celebrities and really rich people, but at the end of the day, like, you wouldn't like if someone messed with your potential bonus that you were expecting after you did this really cool thing that you know is going to make you X amount of money.
I mean, I can't even say like 60, 70, $80 million without feeling some kind of way. And it's not my money. Yeah. You know, I think that's what Scarlett Johansson was supposedly looking at with Black Widow. And I think with this theatrical release situation, it was a situation where, yeah, you can do this. I don't know if you should. It strikes me that Warner Brothers just got bad advice. Like, I would love to be a fly in the room to see how they got from A to B, like, this is what's going to happen. And no one in the room said, like, well, like, maybe let's call Patty and let's call Chris and, you know, let's talk this out.
Yep, I think everyone was just, you know, underwater. Everyone was trying to figure it out. It's just, you know, now there's consequences to these decisions, right? And so I'm going to be really curious to see what filmmakers collaborate with Warner Brothers going forward, right? Like, they're clearly doubled down on the DC universe. A lot of studios are going through huge overhauls, man. I mean, at first I was like, oh, streamers, that's not going to take over. But now, based on how the established studios are kind of crumbling, it's not out of the possibility for Apple, Amazon, and Netflix to be the big game in the industry.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you look at, so like you mentioned Apple, the stuff that they put out has been really good to me. I've enjoyed the stuff that they're doing. And the crazy thing is this, they have enough cash on hand to buy some of these studios. Like, if they just wanted to die, so the same way that Amazon just bought MGM, they could do the same thing. So it would be an interesting way for them to snake in and make themselves a bigger player in this arena.
I mean, there's always a possibility for Apple and Disney to get together in regards to film production and stuff. And then they have this mega app for streaming. And then they have just a monopoly on big date releases, right? Because that's the thing that's so crazy about that Spider-Man No Way Home trailer is that, yeah, Sony's having their own issues and stuff. But dude, think about how much, like, we all saw Endgame, and that was the second highest grossing film of all time. Do you know how much money Spider-Man 3, even with a pandemic, is going to make? Just because if they do the multiverse thing that everyone thinks that they're going to do, it's going to be, I'm honestly, like, I'm still like trying to process how many people are going to go to the theater, even though it might still be in the height of Delta variant, to see that movie. Cause that's how much hype there is for this movie.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, I'm actually kind of surprised that they did not show more than what they did. Cause I'm thinking back to the Civil War trailer. And I remember being kind of annoyed that they showed Spider-Man in the Civil War trailer. Cause we didn't know, like we knew, but people didn't know that he was coming. And so with this one, I'm actually surprised they didn't do something similar, like some wink to the camera where you got either Andrew Garfield or Tobey Maguire, like something. I'm glad they didn't, but I'm surprised as well.
Now, do you think they're really in it? Because Andrew Garfield, you know, he's doing promo for Tammy Faye, which just came out, and I saw it. It's a really, really good. It's fucking crazy. But, you know, he's adamantly, like, almost like uncomfortably, like, trying to tell people, like, please, you're going to get disappointed. Please stop bothering me about this. But do you think he's in it?
Yes. Okay. The only reason that I think that he's in it is because they got Jamie Foxx back as well. Mm-hmm. And so that connection is the thing that makes me think that that's true.
But why,
if Jamie Foxx wasn't it?
I was just curious. Why announce Alfred Molina and Jamie Foxx, right? But none of the other rumored Sinister Six, like Thomas Hayden Church, I believe the guy that played the Lizard. Like, it's just weird, like, how they've, even Willem Dafoe, right? I mean, it's weird they teased him without actually showing him, because I'm like,
yeah,
it's like the best villain, like, one of the best villains I've seen in all these superhero movies. So I'm like, I'm holding out hope that I'm going to get the coolest Spider-Man movie ever. But I'm also like, because of the way Andrew's just like getting red in the face and being like, please, like, people are going to be so disappointed. I'm like, oh no. Like, did it just, was it a rumor that just got so out of control that he's like I'm really trying to be honest, but we haven't heard from Toby. I want to hear what Toby has to say. Cause I don't think he could, I don't think he's a good liar. Well, no, he's a good poker player. Never mind. I just talked to myself out of that.
Talked yourself out of it. Okay.
Did you ever see Miles game, by the way?
I have no idea. No. Is it good?
It's good. Michael Cera plays this really sadistic poker player that's based on a celebrity, and that celebrity is rumored to be Tobey Maguire.
Shut up. Really?
Yeah. Because Tobey Maguire is like apparently wild.
Okay. Here, I'm going to write it down right now.
Molly's game. Jessica Chastain, man. She's been killing it.
Yeah.
She was great.
So was that is not digital, right? That was only
in the theaters. I think the premiere was at TIFF. And I didn't know much about the phase. So the whole story was very fascinating to me. I think she does a great job in that really crazy role. Andrew Garfield, solid per usual, as the husband.
Yeah.
Also piece of shit, but I thought the movie, I was very surprised. It's one of those, one of the few movies at TIFF that I was genuinely like, wow, that was really good.
Really? Okay. Yep. So you got me sitting here making more and more lists. So let's rewind a little bit. Talked a little bit about Dune. I want to get like your full on, how is the movie?
We do scales of popcorn on my podcast. Of now, I have it at a medium just because visually it was cool. Every actor did the thing, right? I think Timothy Chalamet, like a little bit too moody. He kind of had like poo face, which is something I refer to. Like it's like this kind of constipated, angsty look, but he has it throughout a 2.5 hour movie. And I'm just like, okay. Yeah. And like I said, Zendaya, Javier Bardem, like conservatively in the movie, screen time and dialogue, I would say 6 minutes.
Really?
I was very surprised. I'm like, oh, okay. So most of the people of color like are barely in the movie. Okay. Got it. I think
Stellan Skarsgård is creepy as hell.
Momoa's cool. Momoa's he just gets to have fun. He gets to be just a badass that's like, okay. But every role he's like Jason Momoa, right? Like, so Jason Momoa in the sci-fi movie, Jason Momoa's Aquaman. Dave Bautista, I think they're building up to do more with him because he was just kind of screaming and running around, and that was it. Like, he's barely in the movie too now. I think about it,
man. I gotta go back and see if I can find that comment because you mentioned Skarsgård. I remember him saying something like he regretted the fat suit or something like that.
But that's the character, though. From my understanding with the description in the book and everything of his character, it's supposed to be this almost Jabba the Hutt meets Emperor Palpatine kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you see the original movie?
I didn't.
No? Okay.
Yeah. David Lynch and I have a weird relationship, man. Like, I try his movies and then I'm just like, I'm good. Tried Twin Peaks. I was like, I'm good.
Okay. So it sounds like the majority of what you saw, you saw in the theater. How much digital stuff did you watch?
So I only watched, I would say, 3 or 4 digital movies, and I have one more to watch tonight. Everything else I saw in theaters. I had 12 press and industry passes, so I maxed that out.
Okay.
Actually, we got a bonus one because we met the director of this documentary called Hold Your Fire at a coffee shop, and he got us into the premiere screening. So we got
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so tell me about your process. So this is, you covered it last year, right?
Yes, virtually.
But it was all digital. Yes. So for this year, what was your plan walking into it for, like, I'm there live? Walk me through that.
Yeah, and this is what is most disappointing is I was looking to meet a lot of fellow film critics and get to watch movies all day, enjoy myself, and then just talk about movies all night. Like,
yeah.
For someone that's a huge movie fan, like there's no better thing. And I've been craving to be able to geek out about films the way you can with critics, right? Like you and I, we can talk about movies. Like we got E-Man, he's part of AFCA. I can talk to him about comic book stuff all the time. Like, so I was really excited about that. And then no one really won. At least within my circle, no one was really there, or everyone had like you know, virtual interviews and all this stuff. And I was just trying to like let the city take me where it was going to take me and network. And it didn't really happen that way. Like after the movie, everyone files out. You're supposed to go to the exit unless you have another screening. Mm. But they kind of spaced out the screening, so you really didn't have another immediate movie to see. So they would kind of direct you out. It was very organized, but I was really upset that there's no concession stand. I couldn't eat nothing. There was one day I saw four movies, man, and 2 hours each, and I'm just sitting there dry. No soda, no popcorn. I was miserable.
Can't do it. So before I ask you my next question, you mentioned E-Man. Have you been watching What If?
Yep.
Have you seen him talk about this last episode?
I haven't seen that yet. I try not to watch too many of his, because he and I, we have a lot of difference of opinion. So like I try not to watch too many of his recap, just because I'm like, I don't like what you said, or I don't like what that angle is. But I appreciate it because he's willing to just put it out there and stuff. But
yeah,
I haven't watched the latest one. Is it crazy?
Okay.
Does he say it in a while?
Yeah. I enjoyed his comments on it, and I enjoyed the episode as well. So yeah, I'm hoping what happens in this last episode doesn't end up happening, but
we'll see what happens. From what I read, in talking to E-Man, he did Medium Popcorn Podcast, where he talked about his campaign to keep the child alive.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I think Marvel put itself in a position where it can have its cake and eat it too, where they can technically kill off this multiverse T'Challa and then bring in another multiverse T'Challa to like take its place. Because I think I have this crazy theory that What If episode with Doctor Strange, it leads into Spider-Man. So my theory is, because you know, everyone's talking about how Doctor Strange like wouldn't put the spell, like why that's so irresponsible, right? Especially after everything that happened with Endgame. And I'm like, after that Doctor Strange episode, what if that dude in that episode, even though it looks like the universe has been destroyed, what if he was able to find another universe where Rachel McAdams' character lives, which would be our MCU universe, right? And then he's taken Strange's place as him and kind of locked Strange up in like some kind of portal. Because the rumor is that that's how he collects the Sinister Six, is that he puts them in this like chamber thing, right? So imagine the real Doctor Strange is stuck in something like that, and that's what the Multiverse of Madness is about. It's about him escaping and then, or like encountering Wanda in that. I was really like, with that episode, I'm like, I feel like this might lead into something.
So I definitely think that they set themselves up to go somewhere with it. It wouldn't surprise me if that is what happened. I was thinking more that what happened from this particular episode is that they're going to wrap it all. There's an overarching story to What If.
Mm.
And by the time we get to the end of that, like we're going to see what that is. And that's what this plays into. But that's just as plausible as anything else. And to your point about their cake and eating it too, at the point where we've gotten like an entire show full of Lokis, you can't tell me there isn't another T'Challa that you could bring into this universe. Cause that would be frustrating. I don't want to relive that. I don't. So I would prefer it if they just did not even have to go and get another universe version or end up killing this version of T'Challa, that they just found a way to do a sly swap. And I would prefer that, because I don't want to, having him pass away and then have to live through that again on screen.
Yep.
Nah.
I understand. And I definitely think that, you know, I trust Ryan Coogler, man. I've been rolling with him since the Fruitvale Station. So he definitely has earned that. So I'm trusting what he's doing. I'm pretty confident Shuri takes over the mantle, but that hasn't been confirmed. However, it was kind of confirmed for me after we did the Africa roundtable for Small Axe.
Yeah.
So I remember when they were like,
don't ask her like, about it.
Yeah, they don't ask her about it. But then the day after that press roundtable that we had, she did an interview where she talked about the vaccine stuff, and that got shut down real quick. And I was like, yeah, because Marvel's protecting her. because like you're about to be literally the new star of our franchise. And it right. fits with what they're doing, because after seeing Black Widow, after seeing Shang-Chi,
Captain America
now with Anthony Mackie, the next round of Avengers is going to be predominantly people of color and women. That is awesome. So why not put Shuri right directly into that as one of the smartest people? And they're going to have Ironheart too. I mean, we're about to see some black girl magic on these Marvel screens. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah. And from that perspective, I have no issue with the mantle, any of the other stuff. I think it's great. And canonically, that's what happens, right? At different points in the comic book, she's the person that takes the mantle. For me, it really is just that. I think that character of T'Challa should be allowed to live on. That's really it. That's the Kool-Aid that I drink. So something else I was going to ask you, not Marvel related. That's what it was. So you're talking about these screenings. You're in the screenings. They get you to the exit. As you're going in, how did you feel about the COVID protocols?
I think they made sense. Everyone wore a mask. They constantly remind you to keep your mask on over your nose. So I think they handled that really well. I mean, you had to show proof of vaccine when you enter the theater. You had to show ID. So they were very, very diligent. It's just, COVID's weird, man, because you could go to a restaurant down the street, right? They're doing all these precautions at TIFF, but you go to a restaurant around the corner, you wear a mask to get inside, you're inside, you take off the mask. But you're still right. surrounded by a bunch of people, right? And so it was like, I get what they were doing, but they can't control the other elements. And so there's always a risk. And now after receiving a few emails from them saying that people tested positive in some of my screenings, I'm kind of like, I don't know if it was a risk. You know, I went with my co-host who's literally at the hospital expecting the second son. Like we didn't get what we thought we were going to get out of it. And now it's not like I'm regretful because I can't go back in time. Right. But had I taken a little bit more time to decide if in person makes sense, I might've reconsidered.
Okay. That's actually going to be my next question. What do you wish you had done? Okay.
Dude, we went to the press lounge, right? Like we're typically like when we've gone to Tribeca Film Festival, the press lounge is popping. Like, people were there, people were mingling, talking. And so we're like, okay, this is international. Like, this is TIFF. Like, this is a big deal. It's got to be.
Yeah.
We went there and there's like four other people there and they all are spread out and they're like just head down, either looking at papers or on the computer. No one's talking to anybody. And it was cold, man. I was just like, oof, okay. I traveled from New York to this. Okay.
Did you drive or did you fly?
I flew because it's only an hour and a half flight. And so it was quick. And I got my tickets early too. So I got them really cheap.
Okay. Was there anything that you wanted to see that you didn't get a chance to see?
No. I think because the last movie I was going to see that I didn't get to see was, I was just telling you about The Survivor with Ben Foster, but because that was the last night and there's supposed to be this event like for people attending TIFF for like meeting Joshua Jackson from Dawson's Creek and all this stuff. So I went to that instead. It was terrible.
Why would you go to that?
Well, you know, I was so eager to like meet people, like, right? Like last time I was in Toronto, man, I met so many people. I felt like I was the mayor of Toronto. I was having a ball. And so I'm expecting that, and like no one's talking to each other, no one's really interested. So I was just like, let me try to go talk to Pacey. Let's see what was going on with that show. And then
were you a Dawson Creek fan back in the day?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I thought I was Dawson. Right.
Okay. I was never Wood guy. So yeah. Okay. Sorry, go ahead. So you were telling the story. So you tried to go meet Pacey and then.
Yep. So I ended up skipping the Survivor screening. But then I saw that it was online. So I'm like, oh, perfect. When I get back to the States, I'll be able to watch it. And that's what I did last night. Everything else I got to see, the process for picking your tickets at first was a little wonky. I thought I was going to miss out because it was like, first set up your schedule, then put your list together. Then you're going to have an opportunity to then confirm your Ticketmaster there is a whole thing, but it was all spread out like within like a few weeks. So it wasn't like, hey, here's an email with all the steps and you do them now. It was like, here's the next step that's going to come in a week. Here's the next step that's going to come in a week. So it was a bit annoying and I was worried I wasn't going to get some of the movies I wanted to do, but I was able to book everything. I was able to see Last Night in Soho, which I really wanted to see. Dear Evan Hansen, just so I could let people know whether or not it's worth it. I was really surprised by The Humans. I'm a big fan of Richard Jenkins and Steven Yeun. So I was like, oh yeah, I'll definitely see this. And I was really surprised by that. I know some people in our circle of critics had some problems with the privilege in that movie, but I thought the familial themes were really, really good.
So you really liked it?
I really liked it. I think the actress that played the mother, I'm always blanking on her name. She definitely is going to get nominated. Like if she,
okay.
The only reason she doesn't is if the studio doesn't do their job in campaigning. Like she had some phenomenally powerful scenes and great sense of humor. Like that's what also I related to was that the family was kind of ribbing each other and like just have these like sarcastic responses like that are just quiet, not even with dialogue. And I'm like, this was written by someone who knows like what family is like. And I think that the film, it goes into this weird horror element, which I was surprised by. But I really enjoyed it. It's one of my favorite of the festival.
Wow. Okay. Before I ask you my next question, I have a different question. What about the opposite way? So was there anything that surprised you, like you were really excited to see that let you down?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Dear Evan Hansen, I had no idea that was going to be. It's, I don't want to say it's as bad as Cats, but it's one of those musicals that's going to get made fun of so much just because it's so bad. It's so exploitative. And Ben Platt, I feel bad, but he looked like he was clearly in his mid to late 20s. Like from scene one, they show his eyes. I'm like, he's got crow's feet. Like he's not 16 or 17, whatever this kid is. And so the whole musical, you're supposed to be watching him. And I'm like, yeah, he's going to be a social outcast because he looks like he's 35 years old. Like they're going to be like, who are you? And then like some of the creative choices, because I saw the Broadway musical, some of the creative choices with the character kind of felt borderline problematic. And then just it feels more like he's exploiting the trauma of this family versus like genuinely being caught off guard and wrapped up in this mistake, right?
Okay.
Amanda, I'm blanking on her last name, but from The Hate U Give, she's in the movie. She's the best thing about the movie. She's going to be a star too. She's going to be a big star. But yeah, that movie was really bad. My co-host was like, oh, I didn't think it was that bad. I'm like, man, I thought I was going to turn into a horror movie. I thought halfway through the movie, Evan Hansen was going to murder this kid's family. Like, that's how crazy Ben Platt's, like, I was like looking around the theater. I'm like, everyone sees this is an insane performance, right? Like, it's kind of like Simple Jack. It felt like that. It felt like a musical.
No.
That's the way that he was playing that role. Yeah. It felt crazy.
Okay.
It was so bonkers, man.
As you're describing him with his crow's feet and his age, I'm thinking of that Steve Buscemi commercial, that meme because what's going on, fellow young people.
Really underrated comedic actor, man. He's really funny.
Steve Buscemi?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he's absolutely hilarious. Yeah. So how did you go about deciding since there was such a drawn out process in terms of getting the tickets and confirming, and then like some of the three steps to this process, how did you know that far in advance what you were going to watch?
You know, I read like the papers, so Hollywood Reporter, Deadline. So I keep on top of like films that are getting buzz. And so I use that. And then, you know, kind of just going through the descriptions and determining what would be at a top priority if I were to, you know, to go, and like both in person and digital. And so that's kind of how I put my list together. And I think actually this is the list. There wasn't anything really else that I would have added to this list. Of the films I got to see and approved to see.
Okay. Oh man. So that's really good. So if you're only going off of buzz and what you're seeing in those trades, do you ever how do you ever get a chance to see something that would be that's not like an underdog or something that wouldn't necessarily, you understand what I'm asking? I'm asking you poorly.
I think so. I think you're asking me like, how do I get to see the movies that don't get that kind of press or
ignore? Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I read through the descriptions of all the films, even the ones I'm like, I'm definitely seeing that. So that's why I stumbled upon A Hero, right? I didn't even know that it gotten awards at Cannes. It just sounded really interesting. And I know A Separation was a phenomenal movie from what I heard. And so mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I would love to see this director's new project. Worst Person in the World. It just sounded interesting. And then I did read that one, the actress won an awards. I'm like, all right, I'll check that one out. Learn to Swim. The description hooked me. It's like two jazz musicians get in a tumultuous relationship. And I'm like, yes, please.
Yep.
Like, yes. And yeah. Just seeing Black musicians in their element playing jazz music, that was awesome. And so I've been telling a lot of people about that movie. The Dionne Warwick documentary, that's really, really solid. And I knew of Dionne Warwick, but I didn't know about her legacy. So when I saw that description, I'm like, oh yeah, I'll definitely watch this one, you know? Okay. What else is there that... Oh, To Kill the Beast, which is a foreign film. Oh, well, I mean, mm-hmm. a few of the films I watch were foreign, but To Kill the Beast, it's a Brazilian movie. Man, that might be one of the worst films I've ever seen at a film festival. I'm not going to say ever, but at a film festival. Like, Brandon, it was so bad. My co-host and I are in an elevator with a brother that just saw the movie with us. And he turns to us. It's like the only interaction we had with other critics. He turned to us and like, that movie is fucking terrible, right? It was like, yeah. It was really, because we were just stunned at what we watched.
We're yeah. Like, what just confused. Like, how did this get into the festival?
Mm-hmm. It was very confusing.
This was part of my frustration. So you mentioned Learn to Swim. That either wasn't available. I got stuff digitally that was saying it either isn't available in your country or it just would not play. I think they said industry select. And I need to figure out somewhere what that is and what that means and why I can't watch it. But as somebody that was viewing this digitally, that was one of my frustrations. Like, there are things I definitely want to see but cannot. And what pissed me off was one time I was like, you know what, I'll just use my VPN. And so I VPN'd and was able to watch Power of a Dog, and did not like it.
Wow, you're the only critic I've heard in the past few days that said that.
Beautifully shot, beautifully acted, goes nowhere. I was just like, by the time I got to the end of that movie, I was like, I don't care. Like, what's the upshot? Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those people where it's funny. So Jammer, you know, Jammer, we always have this conversation about endings, right? For me, endings matter more than I think maybe him. And I'm just like, that ending to me didn't do anything to move the ball.
So just like, a great ending can even make up for a mediocre movie. Like, endings are really, really important.
Yeah. And so to me, even though I thought that it was really good, like by the end of the movie, I was just like, I don't know what the point of what I watched was. And maybe if somebody explained it to me. And so this happens to me a lot on, when I'm with my co-hosts, they won't like something and I'll go, no, this is why it's good. And so I'll go through like 10 or 15 points of the movie and they'll be like, you know what? Either they will like it more than they thought they did, or they will think I have to go back and watch it now. So maybe somebody could do that for me in this movie that I would think about and change my thinking about this movie. But as I watched it, by the time I got to the end, I was annoyed. And then I could not VPN in to watch anything else. Like, it just did not work. I blew my shot on a movie I didn't like. So yeah.
That's crazy, because you're a critic. You could get the Netflix advance.
Yeah, it's really weird.
That's why I held off on seeing that. I was like, yeah, I'm just going to email whoever in the media center for the screener.
It's not a bad idea. Learn to Swim. When is that coming out? How is that coming out?
I don't know. It's a very small, quiet film. So strictly art house. Probably not going to get any kind of like you know, awards recognition. It's like maybe at the Spirit Awards, but I don't know, man. That's like, that's tough because I don't know where the studios are at these days with like, what do we release in theaters and what just goes straight to one of our streamers. So I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up on a streamer, like maybe Amazon Prime or maybe Apple TV.
Yeah, actually, that wouldn't be surprising because I think what One Night in Miami went from the festival to
Amazon.
To Amazon. Between these last, so last year was your first year, right? Is that accurate?
Yep.
All right. What did you think was a better year?
I will say this year, just because I enjoy being back in the movie theater, right? And getting to see the films. Because I feel like that's one of the advantages of being a critic is you get to go to the theater, see, experience it as it's intended, and then give back word, right? Like I feel like that gets lost in the digital screeners. So that's why I would say it's better. Also, I think it was a little bit smoother, even though I had to go through multiple steps registering. Mm-hmm. Than last year, if memory serves, wasn't there like some issues with like the sites and stuff like that? I mean, that was all film festivals essentially, but
I did not have that problem. As a matter of fact, I think it's weird you say that. I don't remember that from last year at all. I definitely remember getting an email this year where they were like, hey, something got screwed up. And so because of that, we're going to move this, like they were moving things around because the digital platform got messed up. I don't remember that from last year at all.
Yeah, I remember I had, I mean, I did like a TIFF review last year. And so I talked about the virtual experience. The best virtual platform I've seen for a film festival thus far is South by Southwest. Like, okay. I don't know what kind of programmers they had, but I was able to get a mani-pedi while I was watching a movie. That was pretty cool.
Okay. I'm going to have to try and do that because I still haven't. This is the only film festival I've ever covered. Wow. So that's one of the other reasons I want to talk to you. Yeah. I mean, I'm relatively new to this. And then it was convenient and easy for me to do it last year because of the pandemic. Mm. And so that really helped. But yeah. So I really appreciate you hanging out and giving me your thoughts on the movies and your experience at TIFF.
Of course.
I don't want to keep you too long, but this is a great time. I'm glad we finally had a chance to podcast.
Yes. Yes. Tell Jammer, man.
I'm going to tell him. So it's funny. I would have been, so one, he doesn't care about the festival. So I wouldn't have invited him into this. But the other thing is he's having internet issues. So just right now, like if my audio quality sounds terrible to the folks listening, I apologize. I had to switch from my computer to my ear pods and my phone because my Wi-Fi went down. And this is just an issue that I've been having all day. So apologies to you, Brandon, and apologies to anybody listening because this is not how I like to do things. So, but that said, again, thanks for coming on. Thanks for talking to me about your experience.
Absolutely.
Where can you be found? Where's your podcast? Tell everybody listening, you know, what's the...
Sure. Folks can follow me at American Collins. My website's americancollins.com. I'm on all social media platforms. And then check out Media and Popcorn Podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podomatic, all that good stuff. And then mediumpopcorn.com if you just want to go to a website where you can listen to the episodes too. So thank you so much for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
No, thank you. And again, so listen to Medium Popcorn, all of the places where podcasts are sold or streamed. Go listen. Collins is hilarious. And you can find me, Brandon Jones, of course, right here on Breaking Geek Radio Podcast, as well as at Sir Jonesius on Twitter and Instagram. And if you get a chance, go on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast, definitely would appreciate it. And yeah, that's it. So folks, we will catch you next time. Hasta lasagna. That works better with Nick. I forgot. So